Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jug Life Jazz Hour. I'm your host, Chad Wesley Smooth, joined, as always, by majestic Max Montana.
Skip bobbity boop bop 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 wow 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 sow.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey, everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast, joined, as always, by Mercurial Max Montana. Max, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
How are you guys doing?
Everyone out there in TV land.
TV land.
And our special guest today, as we continue our series of episodes here at USAPL Raw Nationals, the esteemed Michael Mike T. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So you got a busy weekend, a lot of athletes out here, and not competing yourself this weekend, right?
Right.
So if people out there in internet land aren't familiar with you, maybe a little background about you as a competitor and as a coach?
Sure. Let's see. I've competed at the IPF level since 2005 or so, and pretty much did some event at that level more or less every year until about 2015, and kind of accumulated some injuries, and so I've taken a break from competing myself, just try to get all that stuff under control. Been coaching since 2008, like doing online coaching since like 2008. So this is really a great opportunity for me to focus a bit more on that. Although, I mean, not to get us too far off topic just to start, but I don't feel like one takes away from the other too much, because I mean, it's powerlifting. It's not like you've got to train for 8 hours a day and you could, like, you just don't have time to ever coach, you know? So like, you can train and still coach, but I'm definitely doing a lot more coaching here. So not competing gives me a lot more time to be with my lifters and actually handle them through competitions, which is nice.
How many athletes do you have at Nationals this weekend?
Around 20. Ish.
You had a pretty good number or two at IPF Worlds this past year.
Yeah, we had, let's see, we had 12 lifters at IPF Worlds, six medalists. So we had as many medalists.
The silver medalist in the 52s, yes. Okay.
For now. we had six medalists this year, so we had as many medalists this year as we had total lifters the year before, which was pretty nice. Wow. So yeah,
and a lot of that's happening through your company, Reactive Training Systems.
Yeah.
And when did you write the Reactive Training Manual, the first one?
Almost 10 years ago. So that came out in 2008, so definitely due for an update, which I will do as soon as I can find some time to write. But yeah, I mean, the core principles haven't changed, right?
You're pretty ahead of the curve there, because I wrote Juggernaut Method in 2010. So okay. But RTS has obviously grown a lot from pretty much just you to now a whole team of coaches. So tell us about the company.
So we focus a lot on coaching. I mean, it's a coaching company primarily. So it's me. We have five assistant coaches, physical therapist that works with us. Injuries happen, and we like to be able to take care of people when they do. Yeah, we like to focus on the individualization process for people, you know, and we're kind of most known for like RPE based training. That's definitely not the only thing that we do. Tend to be pretty hard promoters of it, but you know, there's lots of tools in the toolbox, but that whole individualization process is something that we like.
Now, you know, I do a lot of seminars and stuff and get asked questions about RPE, and I always give the same answer. Really, I say the exact same thing at every seminar. Just I skew the jokes regionally, you know, to forget where you are. Yeah. Good evening, Cleveland. You get the crickets. Yeah. And so I get these RPE questions, and I always say, you know, I talk about you doing RPE. But I have to say that Mike Tashier does not do RPE. You just do RE. You just rate of exertion, because you've got, you know, your tendo on one side, sure. your gym aware. I've been in the gym with you, and you're at the computer in between everyone. Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of perception about it at this point for you.
Well, it's changed a lot over the years, you know. So it started out as definitely the classic, you know, just perception of, you know, reps in the tank kind of thing that's become well known as being RPE and powerlifting, right? And then probably about 2009, I picked up a tendo unit and started playing with that, and got to where I relied on that almost exclusively, because, I mean, it's a really easy comparison to make after you observe some data. Bar speed correlates to RPE really well. But then after relying on that for a long time,
to stop you real quick, would you say that when you say bar speed correlates to RPE really well, do you think that's Mike Tashier's bar speed correlates to Mike Tashier's RPE, or it can be more broadly applied, that this bar speed range is this RPE for the population?
Oh, it's definitely, that's another thing that has to be individualized, right? And it's got to be tailored to, like, velocity at one rep max. So somebody, like, take me on a bench press, my velocity might be a 0.1 meter per second. You take somebody with really long arms, or that's not as skilled at the bench press, and it might be a 0.15 or 0.2 or something like that. You see a lot of variance in the squat. Deadlift is a bit less, it seems like, but it's definitely dependent on the individual, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for people to understand, as velocity-based training has become more and more popular. You know, the Shane Haman squat velocity.
Yeah.
You know, he's maybe at, you know, 1.3 or something on 100% of his max, and when that goes down to 1.1, it's a miss.
Yeah.
Where someone else, you know, is just a grinder. You know, Dan Green.
Yeah.
Like, the first rep of a set of five is 0.5, and so is the fifth rep.
Yeah.
Those guys are just great at grinding weights. But before we continue with you and more talk about RPE and RTS and ABC and XYZ, we want to take a quick break. This episode of The Jug Life is brought to you by Smooth Jazz and Split Jerks. It's a lifestyle. And we're going to take a quick break for a Strength History Minute. Yurik Vardanian, hailing from what is now Armenia, is one of the most celebrated weightlifters in Soviet history, for good reason. Vardanian is a 7-time world champion plus one silver from the 75 kilo up to the 90 kilo class, and is the first lifter to ever total 400 kilos in the 82.5 kilo class. In the 1980 Olympics, Vardanian's gold medal performance in the 82.5 kilo class of 400 kilos also out-totaled the 90, 100, and 110 kilo class winners. He finished his career with PRs of 182.5, 224 at 82.5, and 190, 228 at 90. His 417.5 total in the 90 kilo class is only 4 kilos below Ilya Ilyin's 94 kilo class world record. He broke 43 world records during his competitive career, and another story that really stood out to me was having a broad jump of 4.1 meters, 13 feet 5 inches, a foot over the NFL combine record. All right, hopefully you learned something new there about a legend in the strength game. And I want to continue with Mike about RPE, because, yeah, as I said, I talk about this a lot at seminars, and people ask, you know, should I do percentages? Should I do RPE, sure, reps in reserve? And I often caution more beginner lifters against using RPE, because I think it's a tough thing for them to effectively assess, and maybe can even be a detriment to their own enthusiasm for hard training, can become a detriment for them. So as someone, you know, maybe with a year or less of training experience, what advice might you have for them when implementing RPE?
See, a year or less is tough, because there's so much to focus on at that point. But I do think when you get to the point where you're curious about RPE, you hear about it, just start rating it, you know. You don't have to do anything with it, especially at first. And what I'll tell people to do is, you know, keep doing whatever program you're doing. Just practice rating the RPE. And sooner or later, I find that the thing that'll happen is that they'll say, you know, this set's always an 8.5 RPE, but today I rated it an 8. I wonder if that means I should move the weight up. And then it's like, ah, there's the light bulb, you know, and maybe now you're ready to move into more of an RPE-based program. Like, if it's reliable enough to you that you feel comfortable with it, then, okay, maybe now is a good time to start playing with it a bit more, you know. But before that, it's a skill, so you can practice it, you know.
Is there any common ways you see people often messing that skill up, what do you see people, how do you see people screw an RPE up? Well, you can save them from.
I think there's a kind of mentality of lifter that seems to work best with the system. We've always kind of called it controlled aggressive. You know, like you've got to want to put some more weight on the bar. You know, and it seems kind of weird probably to all of us here to even say that, but it's like if you're lifting weights, you should want to put more weight on the bar, but. Some people don't seem to, you know, they're like happy to keep lifting the same weights until it's, you know, it's achieved some mythical perfection that isn't going to happen. So you have to want to put more weight on the bar, but at the same time, you can't want it so bad that you're willing to, you know, disregard everything else. So you've got to, you know, when in doubt, add another 5 pounds kind of attitude, but with some constraints, with some willingness to be honest with yourself, you know.
The biggest thing RPE is basically, one of the biggest things it's basically doing is preserving the quality of the training, right? Because you could say, here's an open-ended set of, you know, 5 sets of 5 or whatever it is, and, you know, getting outside that realm where the technique is consistent starts to degrade the quality of that training, right? Or it becomes the adaptations are going to be less beneficial, right? Yeah. Applying that to weightlifting, where the like using RPE as a guide for like Olympic lifting would be really difficult because like yeah. We're talking about Shane Hammond, where it's like you might have a lift that's an 8 RPE, but it's 5 kilograms for your maximum, 2 more kilos, and suddenly it changes to be impossible, right? Because sure. The technique is such a big factor. Do you feel like there's any way to use RPE for those kind of ballistic movements?
Yeah, I think there is. So RPE, at least in the powerlifting world, has kind of become synonymous with like a reps and reserve sort of scale, which is cool on one hand, but that's not the only way to use it. Like my wife was a Division I sprinter, and they used RPE in sprinting, you know. So they would say, you know, you're going to run a 200. I want you to run it at 90%,
right?
You know, or 80%. And it's like, oh, well, how do you, like the analytical powerlifters that we all are, kind of go, how do you know if it's 80% or 82%? Like, who cares? You
right,
know,
right.
Just run and
stopwatch.
That's true.
Well, I mean, in terms of effort, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one thing that I think would be cool, and you would be able to comment a lot more on its practicality than I would, but like if you could think of it as, you know, kind of a kilos in reserve sort of thing,
right,
rather than reps in reserve, because reps in reserve doesn't make sense for some things, you know. You know, your reps in reserve for a box jump, like what is that?
Right, right.
So I think it just means something different in those sorts of areas, but it's just not reps, you know.
So it's interesting because do you find or do you write programs where, like in weightlifting, most of the work you're going to do is always submaximal on some level. There's never really, you know, you're not going to maximize the number of repetitions you're doing per set to the end where you would in powerlifting, where you might have, you know, you're doing sets of 4 or 5 that are at an 8 or a 9 RPE or even a 10 RPE. In weightlifting, you're doing singles that would be at like a 6 or a 7 RPE.
Sure.
Where, you know, it's just a very different style of training.
Yeah.
In powerlifting, do you find you're ever writing? I mean, most of the stuff you're doing is so close to the end range, you know, the end reps per set, right? You're 8, 9 RPE or something like that.
The goal is to put the right weight on the bar, lift it the right number of times, right? So I think, so we do sometimes use like really submax effort stuff for powerlifting. And if you're working at like a 6 or a 7 RPE in powerlifting terms, it's like, who cares, you know, just pick a percentage. Like if you're off by 5%, you know, based on that day's capabilities, the consequences are minuscule, you know. But, you know, if you're working at a little bit higher, closer to the threshold, then the consequences are a little bit more serious and you may want to, you know, dial it in a bit more closely, you know.
So you mentioned that, you know, 6 and 7 RPE stuff. I know you don't really, you're never really writing something that's like a 6 RPE, maybe outside of a deload.
Sure.
The concept I've thought about with that, because I've done, you know, a speed type of work or light work and controlled rest periods where I might do something in the squat like 5:15 for 8 triples on 1 minute rests. Mm-hmm. And 5:15 is a weight that in shape I could squat for 20. So a set of 3 is what, a -7 RPE.
Right. Yeah.
But I guess how much do you look at the quality and the intent maybe of the reps? Because when I'm doing triples, you know, and I'm trying to just no break at the top, just boom, boom, boom. And maybe I could do 1 or 2 more reps of that same speed and that same intent. Do you ever factor that kind of thing in?
I haven't in the past, but I mean, I don't see why you couldn't. So the issue with this and something that I've been a little bit resistant to is just kind of an explosion of what it could mean, you know? So part of the benefit of an RPE system is that it should help us communicate more clearly. But then we run into some of these scenarios like that. Like another scenario is with singles. I think if you have a skilled lifter taking a single at an 8 RPE, you know, that means something a little bit different than definitely 2 reps left in the tank. You know, like it can get a little bit fuzzy around the edges, and that would be like your example would be another example of where it's like, well, like I wish there was you could almost have a different scale, but then, you know, that really hinders the clear communication piece and it just blows out.
Yeah, like I probably have a 40 or 50 pound range that I can't do another rep.
Yeah,
but I can do 40 or 50 more pounds, you know, depending on where I am in that range. So that's because those would all be nine point something RPEs, I guess.
Right. Like, I mean, if you're going to be a purist about how it's administered, but for example, a lot of times when I have a lifter, like I'll tell them do a single at an 8 RPE. What I'm looking for is a single that looks like if they did it as an opener, I would be like, that's a little bit heavy for an opener, you know. So I'm looking for something in that range. And you know, sometimes, oh well, you couldn't have done 2 more reps with that. Well, okay, as long as we're putting the right weight on the bar, lifting it the right number of times, then we're getting mostly to where we want to go, you know.
So it seems to me, and this is just an observation, that a lot of coaches and lifters that use more of like a DUP sort of style of training adhere to RPE a little bit more than you know, different types of training styles. When you're doing that or whatever, you know, when you're training in that vein, is it possible where, well, I guess, what are the factors you're looking for in terms of managing that fatigue, where maybe you have like an accumulation of X number of RPEs in a week, you know, or a certain amount of volume at a certain average RPE or something?
I suppose I have to speak for my own experiences, but I tend not to favor approaches that tend to accumulate a lot of fatigue. Just in terms of like a general approach, like the notion of like building up this big fatigue debt where you can't perform, like maybe you're like at 90% of your best, and then you deload and kind of have this slingshot effect where I've never been able to get that to work.
Yeah.
So we just kind of don't do that, you know. I know some other coaches who maybe use it a bit differently. They don't use it to regulate the weight on the bar. They may just use it to cap the volume, you know. You know, I want you to do 7 sets of 5 with whatever percentage, but if the RPE hits whatever, then stop. You know, so you're supposed to do 7 sets, but if you may stop at 5, you know, depending on how that goes. So there's lots of different ways to use it. It's just kind of a way to measure the effort, though. It just kind of comes back to that, I think.
It seems like that can be the case, right, where you get people that do – it's almost like they're accumulating fatigue for the sake of just doing that, right?
Well, it's funny to kind of look at styles of training that have become popular and like waxes and wanes in popularity. Right. It seems like that was a big deal in like 2015-16 time frame. Maybe I'm just out of the loop, but it seems like that's declining a bit and people are – maybe returning.
What do you feel like is a more of a trend now?
Good question. I'm wondering if
all
I'm
singles every day, maximum, all the time.
I hear about this, but I don't know.
I think that's definitely a topic I want to delve into a little bit more. You know, not just general trends that you see, but changes in your thoughts. 10 years ago compared to now. But what are some things that, you know, Mike Tashier of 2017 looks back on 2008, Mike Tashier 2005, Mike Tashier, and thinks like, you're really missing the boat back there.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, so much has changed, right? And I hear about it a lot since. So the book is like a snapshot of, you know, thoughts at that time, you know. So since then, we've kind of gone through trends of a lot higher frequencies in training, a lot more specificity in training, and then kind of not really back again, but definitely a lot more individualized now. And probably the biggest thing that I've learned and done differently in the last, I don't know, say a couple of years, has been change things a lot less. It seems like my tendency was to just shotgun variation out there. You know, the program changes every week. You never have 2 weeks that are exactly the same, you know. And it's like, well, why? You know, if you kind of stop that and let the program settle a bit more, I think you get a much more clear picture of the adaptations that the athlete's going through. And you learn a lot more and can do a lot cooler stuff with it. For example, I've got one guy competing this weekend. Whenever we would peak for a competition, his results would just kind of fizzle. You know, things were going great, you know, looks great. And then those last couple weeks is just, you know, and when we started slowing it down, we see it's high intensity. Every time we start touching high intensity, his performance suffers. He starts feeling beat up. So let's just not do that, right? And we ended up sending him into a competition doing nothing heavier than a set of six, set of nine RPE, so like 80-85% depending on the lifter. And yeah, I mean, it's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's not powerlifter stuff, right? And it did make attempt selection a little bit scary, but he smashed it and set some big PRs and stuff. And so for this competition, he'll compete on Saturday. We experimented with kind of alternating every other week. So we would go heavy 1 week and then stay away from it the next week. And it's been kind of a middle of the road. Like, he's not as beat up as before, but he's not quite as awesome as before. However, at the same time, his strength is still staying up and he's not kind of having that fizzle effect. So we're learning a lot about his individual response. Now, that's not a thing that I would have everybody do, but if you can get into those kind of details, man, I think that's great.
What are some kind of general markers that you're looking at? Maybe even sort of intake type of information to begin to assess or to begin to make like the most informed guess that you can with a person starting off.
Training history is probably the main one. So if we're starting with somebody new, man, if they've got a good training history, a good training log, then that's really valuable. A lot of people don't, or at least don't have it to the degree to which it would be helpful. So one thing that we're kind of playing with more recently, we've been trying to get personality data from people. I've talked to a lot of coaches that just anecdotally notice like some personalities tend to do better with one approach or another approach. So wouldn't it be cool if there was something more tangible, like, hey, on this test you rated really high in conscientiousness, which means, you know, your training would usually be, no, it's only a starting point for individualization, but if you can have a little bit better starting point, then that whole process is a little bit faster. So I think that would be neat.
That's kind of interesting, because I feel like that's something that I've always noticed a lot, especially with just having a variety of different athletes coaching them, and like, you just see different types of personalities that really like are similar, like, okay, these guys were, these two athletes I coached at different times, very similar personalities, the programming reflected, you know, certain similarities in that for those people. It's kind of neat to see that you're seeing the same kind of thing, right? Yeah, I'm not just crazy.
No, not at all. So even to the point where, so we just kind of took a quick internal look of like, okay, let's take the personality data from our own clients and only clients that you've had for more than 6 months. So the assumption being if they've stayed for 6 months, then they must be somewhat happy with it.
Right.
And then look at personality differences between the coaches on our staff. That was interesting because you go, so-and-so tends to work with clients that are high in neuroticism. This other person tends to be really high in agreeableness or, you know, these different things. And you start to go, you know, maybe it's a, and it's not so simple as like, well, that's just the personality of the coach or the opposite personality of the coach, but there's some sort of interplay between those, you know?
So then when you find like the one coach on your team who's like secretly dressing up as a woman and like killing cats in the alley, you like start to, you might send a feeler out to the FBI for all his clients too. You don't want to look at these folks.
Right. RTS watch list.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So something that, you know, we're about, and I know that you're about, is education and trying to best educate coaches and athletes towards, you know, helping them with their goals. And in doing that, we do it mostly through the internet, which is a different way.
Sure.
And, you know, certainly has its positives and its drawbacks. And I think something that you've done that's helping to really advance that is your RTS classroom. So tell us about, you know, why you wanted to create that and kind of what it is.
Sure. I'm glad we get to talk about this, actually, because I think it's a really cool thing. And it stemmed from doing seminars, really. And every time you would go to a seminar, you would have, you know, at most like a day to tell them everything you know. And you always have to start at the beginning because it's a new crowd. So you can never really, part of it's selfish because I could never really get into what I thought was the really cool stuff, you know?
And Max and I have seen that. I'm always surprised at seminars when by a show of hands, who has read Scientific Principles of Strength Training? Who has watched this video, that video? I would think that it would be 100% of people. Because it's like, well, the video is free on YouTube, so why wouldn't you watch that before you pay $150 to come and listen? But it's like a third of people will raise their hand for that.
Right.
Yeah. So the prerequisites are a tough part.
Yeah. So you end up covering, and there's value in seminars, I think, for other reasons. But in terms of just pure getting the information, you kind of get a certain level, you know, and so it kind of stemmed from us wanting to get a lot more in depth. So by teaching it on the internet, you know, you have a series of 10 classes that are 30 minutes each, and you can get into a lot more depth, and then you can do a series of classes. And so we have I guess microcycles is technically the starting point, because the idea is let's start at the beginning. And how do you build a really great microcycle? It's the foundational period of training, designing and executing a really great training session, a really great training week. And then we build on that into mesocycles. But then we go further, but those first two classes are prerequisite. You know, we talk about individualization, we talk about emerging strategies and using training metrics and all this other stuff, but everybody that gets to those classes has already covered the basics, so we can talk about them in more detail and kind of do some neat stuff with it. And now we're adding a lot more classes, getting other intelligent coaches and interesting people to teach about their relative areas of expertise. So it's been neat.
These are like a online course that goes for a certain number of weeks, and people are signing up online and taking maybe a lecture course, or how exactly does it work?
Sure. So each class is about 10 lessons, pretty much always 10 lessons, and it takes course over 3 months. So courses begin in January, April, July, October. Yeah. 10 lessons, 3 months.
Right.
So there's the online video component, but we wanted to have an interactive component as well. So we set up a Facebook group and we have discussion questions and try to get people access to the instructors as well. You know, ask your questions, participate in the class. So when we teach mesocycles, for example, which is going on now, and we have a lesson about block periodization, you know, there's kind of homework involved with it. Now, if you don't do the homework, you don't get booted from the class or anything. But if you want to get the most out of it,
right,
then write a training program. And there's kind of some specifics all laid out. Write a training program using block periodization. And then it gets critiqued. And hopefully there's a lot more learning that gets involved from, you know, just
that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
Thanks.
Nice.
Yeah, we should totally steal that idea.
Yeah, no, I'm already just going to get in there and start pulling pieces out. It's kind of neat because you see a lot of people that it seems like what happens in this industry is that somebody, you know, of your ability or Chad's ability creates programming, creates something, some content, some actual information that gets disseminated down to the next level where people take the key components of it, missing some of the finer points of details. Again, that gets spread to a larger group of people because 10 people took that information and distributed it. Then, like a pyramid scam, those 10 distilled it even more down to, like, you know, to eventually a point where it becomes almost like an infographic or just a picture, you know, and eventually it'd be like a picture with, like, you know, one letter and like an image, you know, a stick figure doing a dumbbell clean or something.
Right.
And that becomes now this training knowledge. And so it's cool that you have this education course, I think. It's difficult because you're always in that challenging place where when you create this and you produce that, that it gets kind of taken and redone and redone and redone to the point where it's kind of washed out in the end, right?
Well, so we primarily are a coaching company, right? But for me, myself, I've always wanted to tinker with my own training. So I've always kept it and I've never gone out and like had a coach do my training for me because I like to tinker with it, you know? So I thought, you know, people that want coaching and think like, well, I don't want to worry about it. I want somebody else to figure it out. And I want, you know, there's a variety of reasons to hire a coach, but there are people that just want to tinker with it, or maybe they coach other people or something like that. And so kind of getting more into the weeds and talking about why, and, you know, the nerdy ones of us.
Right. It definitely seems like there's people that are much more interested in the actual process and knowing that stuff are going to be a little more attracted to this kind of thing.
And then you take a book, like, so you can read Isherin's book on block periodization.
Right.
And that doesn't, when you read the book, you won't finish it and go, now I know how to build a block periodization program for powerlifting. So how can we kind of make that a little bit more plain to people, you know? And so we start out with a framework, you know, like, well, this is generally the process that you go through for building any program. And now we're going to talk about the rules for linear periodization, the rules for block periodization and everything else, you know? And after that, it's just kind of plugging it into the system.
Right. Instead of writing, you know, Mike T's 3 weird tricks to make your powerlifting total go up. Yeah, that's cool. That's a really interesting idea.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, you hit on so many critical concepts there in the education process, because, you know, we get that where people they read the most advanced article we have first and they missed all the other ones. But when you write the articles or make the videos, it's hard to separate the idea, like, well, everyone's watched all the other ones so far, right?
Sure.
So I think that progressive, you know, system of education and also the such an important concept that I think is lost by a lot of powerlifters and a lot of elite powerlifters is there's a big difference between knowing my program or you know, Mike T's program versus knowing programming.
Yeah.
Like understanding the why and how and the principle-based knowledge. So you're doing the Lord's work, son.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it.
So what's next for RTS, upcoming projects or events or anything?
Man, lots of stuff. It seems like no grass grows under our feet. But we periodically do a Project Momentum, which is just our kind of, not really research projects, but we have an interesting training question and we want to get an answer to it in the most specific way possible. Like, we want it to be applicable to real powerlifters, probably working in an online setting. So we'll set out to answer that question. So we'll probably start another one. It's supposed to be last month, but it'll realistically probably be next month. But, you know, so there's that. Those are always free to sign up for people that just kind of want to.
And what exactly is that? Is it like a survey thing?
Well, there's a training program involved. Okay. Good question, actually. So you sign up for Project Momentum, and there will be a process as far as collecting initial data from everyone, and then you'll get a training program that's however many weeks long, and all that's spelled out up front. And kind of inclusion criteria, people that we recommend it for, people we don't recommend it for, and so on. And then we help them through the training program. At the end of the training program, we'll have an exit questionnaire typically and try to collect some more data that way. So there's that. That's coming up. We're also planning to do a seminar in New York early in November. We want to...
You might want to get on that. That's in like 2 weeks.
I know, right?
But, that's probably after this episode may have come out.
Well, so there's that. You missed it. we're always developing new stuff for the website as well, which is probably the major ongoing project that we have. We have a set of online tools on the website that are available for free for anyone to use. There's a training log application. There's an athlete monitoring application that helps you track how recovered you are, and just a lot of ways to get good, useful information back out of your training log. You know, so the guy I was talking about, who we figured out, you know, that he tends to respond best to sixes, and so we just don't have him push heavier than that very often. That was a result of using the online system that's just kind of out there. It's freely available. So if anyone is interested in that or wants to sign up for it, you just go to reactivetrainingsystems.com. You log in, you click on apps, you're there. You know,
Mike, very cool, man. It sounds like you guys are doing awesome stuff. And, five, 6 years we've known each other. Very cool to see your website grow, your company grow, all that stuff. So thank you for coming on and sharing.
Thanks very much.
Now, if you are a fan of the Jug Life podcast and information like this, I feel like we could probably do 4 more episodes with you today, but we'll let you do your coaching, I guess. Please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something nice, something funny, maybe a bit of both. And if I read it on the air, you can email me and I'll send you something for free. Like this one from NRWGN. I'm not going to try and guess what that stands for. It said, what Chad Wesley Smith lacks in hairline, he makes up for in great information. I just got a call. Years of experience and humor. I'm actually glad there is no video for podcasts because, well, there is now. This is an older one. Because if I had to choose between necessities to sustain life or looking at Chad and his baby blue eyes would win every time. Whether you're into powerlifting, Olympic lifting, or just pretending that you lift on the internet, this is the podcast for you. Well, thank you very much. Sorry they didn't say anything nice about you, Max. Well, I'm not that sorry. But... thanks for listening. Thanks for writing the reviews. We really appreciate that. And the more reviews and ratings we get in there, the more people are going to be able to find the podcast. So beyond that, if you are interested in online coaching and you didn't think that all the great stuff that Mike just said was awesome, which it was, you probably should go with him now. It sounded very, very much more professional than we are. But we do that too at juggernautcoaching.com for powerlifting, weightlifting, and super total. So they don't know how to do weightlifting. They think it's a weird looking deadlift. Yeah. So you can check that out. Subscribe to our YouTube. Always proud of the content we put up here. If you're interested in seminars with Max or myself, you can shoot us emails, chad@jtsstrength.com, max@jtsstrength.com, or visit the events section at store.jtsstrength.com. Mike, where can people learn more about you?
I guess the best place is probably the RTS website. It's reactivetrainingsystems.com. And I'm active on social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, stuff like that.
What's your Instagram name?
Mike Tushier. So good luck with that one.
Yeah. That's E-R-E-R-E-E-R-R-E-R at the end, I think, right?
Close. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You're close.
You can find me max_8 on Instagram or on Facebook. And like Chad said, you can email me max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. Thank you for listening or watching, and we will see you next week.